Live? Thank you. Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, June 12th. This is a special meeting of the WRFCAC, Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. And we apologize for the technical delay. Thank you for your patience. Welcome to the meeting, and thank you for your participation and attendance. I'd like to establish a quorum. All members are present and accounted for. Call the meeting to order, and we will have a short moment of silence, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. Please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to open up with committee announcements, beginning Steve. Do you have anything to announce before we begin?
No.
Thank you. Paul? Val? Dave or Doug or Richard? I have one quick announcement. Today's meeting only has one agenda item, but I would like to announce there's a special City Council meeting tomorrow evening, Wednesday, June 13th, at Vets Hall, beginning at 5 p.m., and that will be a total update on the Water Reclamation Facility project. So that will include not only what we discuss and or recommend today, as well as cost information and other decisions that our City Council will be making. That's tomorrow night, same location, 5 p.m. Thank you. All right, so let's proceed to the design build team selection recommendation. I'll turn it over to staff. I believe you have a is there any public comment on any items not on the agenda for which you cannot stay? There's only one item on the agenda. I apologize for glossing over that. Okay. Then we will have public comment, obviously, after the presentation and our discussion as well. Rob, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a presentation of the recommendation for design build team selection. We have with us our program manager, Eric Saris from Coral Engineers, who will make the presentation, and then we'll turn it back to the committee for questions and comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Eric Caceres with the city's program team. So I wanted to just run through a quick presentation regarding the procurement process for the design builder for the on-site facilities for the WRF program. Really, the recommendation here today is we would like staff to recommend that the WRFCAC recommend to City Council the selection of the Feelonk Black and Veatch team as the preferred proposer for the WRF on-site improvements and provide direction to staff to begin negotiations with that firm. So I'm going to run through a series of slides here as it talks a little bit about the procurement process in general, and then specifically about some of the activities that have been going on within the last month or so since the design build proposals have been received by the city. So just a little bit of background here. The design build procurement for this component of the program, it's a two-stage selection process. The first stage started with the city issuing a request for qualifications back in late October of 2017. There was a mandatory pre-SOQ meeting that was included in that RFQ or outlined in that RFQ. And as a result of this process, four statements of qualification were received. Those were received by the city on December 7th of 2017. And those four teams were one consisting of AECOM and Lyles, Black and Veatch, Feelonk, Sunt and Parsons, and Kiewit and Tetra Tech. So based on an evaluation done by city staff and the program team, all four of these firms were shortlisted and invited to participate in the next round of the procurement process. So the next phase was the request for proposals. Again, that was submitted to the four teams that had submitted a statement of qualifications and were deemed qualified to participate in that process. The request for proposals is a pretty long document. You can find it. It's on the city's website. But it has a number of different sections in terms of some background technical information. It outlined the scope of work for the project that the individual teams were to be proposing on. It had the technical requirements and design criteria for the project. So the guidelines, if you will, that the proposals or the proposers would use to develop their proposals. It had their submittal requirements, what was required of these teams to submit. And then it also had the evaluation criteria and an outline of the selection process and how that process would play out once the team submitted their proposals. The RFP went out at the end of January in 2018. And along with or outlined in that RFP, were proprietary meetings. So each team was allowed two proprietary meetings that could be held with staff and the program team. And so as a result of that process, the city received two proposals on May 8th, just about a month ago. Those two proposals were from the two teams that are shown up here. One is the Phelonc Black and Beach team, and the other is the AECOM Wiles team. The RFP outlines the specific requirements that or the evaluation criteria that were to be used for evaluation of those proposals, and you can see that up here. There's a total of 100 points. 40 of those points were awarded based on or lumped into kind of the technical approach that the individual teams would take in development of their proposal. And the other 60 points were tied up in a cost, essentially, a 30-year life cycle cost that was to be prepared and submitted with the individual proposals. So just a little bit about the actual proposal evaluation process. First, it was done in accordance with the RFP. The RFP identifies how that process was going to be conducted. The team worked together to prepare a single evaluation form for each of the individual proposers. Based on a conversation with internally with staff, with the program management team, and then with the WERF subcommittee members for WERFCAC, we decided that it was a good idea to hold interviews. That was something that was provided for in the request for proposals, was the city had the option to conduct interviews with the firms that were submitting proposals. And so a roughly 1.5-hour interview was conducted with each team back on the 1st of June. In terms of the cost, how points were given for the cost, points were actually apportioned for each team based on kind of a ratio or a relationship between the two costs that we received. So number one, the team with the lowest cost got the maximum amount of points, which was 60. And then the next lowest cost or the second proposer's cost were they were about 5% higher, so they got 5% less points than the team that got that had the lowest cost. So that's how the cost portion of the evaluation was handled. After the interviews, we held a working session to discuss the proposals in the interviews. That was done on the afternoon of June 1st. And again, the evaluation team consisted of members from city staff, the folks from the WERF subcommittee, as well as the program manager's technical staff, and provided both a review of the proposals as well as participated in the interview process. So this slide here shows the results of the evaluation. So you can see each column represents one of the two teams. The one on the left is the Black and Beach Phelonc team, and the other is the AACOM Lyles team. And at the bottom, you can see the scores that were given to each of those teams. Just one thing to note, so the price proposal and life cycle cost, the Black and Beach Phelonc team was awarded 60 points, and the AECOM Lyles team was awarded 57 points based on the relationship between the cost for both of those presented in both of those proposals. So just wanted to identify some of the key differentiators of the selected team. Obviously, we just talked a little bit about the cost differential between the two teams on their life cycle cost. But these were just some of the takeaways kind of in general from from the team as a whole, as we discussed there in the afternoon of June 1st. There was a feeling amongst the staff and everybody involved that the Black and Veatch Vielant team was a more cohesive and balanced team between both the design engineers and the contractors. So they represented kind of a balanced team in terms of the way that their team was made up in their interview presentation and their proposal. The Black and Veatch Vielant team also showed in their proposal a way to have an early completion for the project, approximately 6 months before, 6 months ahead of the schedule that's presented in the RFP. They had a very thoughtful and effective approach to project sequencing. They actually prepared a kind of a 4D type type model showing cost and schedule in relation to the sequencing and construction of how the facility would be constructed. They conducted thorough due diligence for cost certainty. They demonstrated a number of things in their interview and in their proposal regarding how they evaluated cost and how they were putting in a lot of rigor to make sure that they presented the most accurate cost that they had available. They focused a lot on co-location of the design build team and the city. They committed to spending a lot of time here in the city of Morro Bay to make sure that they can have a lot of face time with members, different members of the team, city staff, program management team, to help make this project a success. They incorporated the city's ideas from the one-on-one meetings. This team took advantage of both of the proprietary meetings that were made available to them and listened to the city's ideas and incorporated a number of those into their proposal. They had a high level of design detail. In relationship to the two proposals, they had more design detail than the other. They had a process design and a layout of the facility that was more conducive to effective operations based on our evaluation or the team's evaluation. They provided a better design or layout for both short and long-term flexibility. And then they also put forward an innovative design to help reduce costs and handle peak wet weather flows. That was part of their proposal that was discussed a lot in the proposal and then was also discussed at length in the interview process. So just some of the key differentiators on the selection. And just in terms of a timeline, this kind of shows this is a process that started back in the fall of last year. Again, the RFQ was issued at the end of October. There was the pre-SOQ meeting was held at the beginning of November. SOQs were received about a month later in December, beginning of December. RFP was issued in on January 24th. There was the three proprietary meetings that occurred, the one with AECOM Lyles on February 16th and the other two with Black and Veatch. Again, proposals were received on the 8th. The program management team and the city then met and had a kickoff meeting with the WRF subcommittee of WRF CAC on May 16th to talk about the proposal evaluation and provide those individuals, those three individuals on the subcommittee with the proposal information. Again, interviews were held on June 1st. And we worked on the afternoon of June 1st to identify the preferred proposer and develop our recommendation. So that's a timeline of the process from the fall of last year to essentially today. And then the last item that we wanted to identify or just talk about a little bit was there's been a lot of interest in this project from the engineering and construction community. This shows the individual sequencing or individual phases of the project. Really, the city received a number of expressions of interest, and these were the folks that were involved in the pre-SOQ meeting. So we had quite a number of folks that were initially interested in the program or in the project, excuse me. Based on that initial list of people that had showed up to that meeting, the city then received the four statements of qualification. And then as a result, moving into the next phase, the city received the two proposals from the two teams that are listed there on the right. That's all I have, and open it up for your questions.
Thank you, Eric. Three of the members that were on the WRFCAC subcommittee that participated are here. Just want to make sure everybody knows who they are. Steve Shively, Paul Donnelly, and Valerie Lovellette. So I'd like maybe you three to, or one, open it up for your discussion or observations, participation. Anybody that would like to start is fine.
Actually, it was a very interesting process we went through. But at the end of the day, for myself, and I'm only speaking for myself, it lent towards the Phelant group with Black and Veatch, because not only was it the cost, and that was always my prime consideration in going through this, but there actually the facility master plan allowed for two different types of facility, one being an SBR-based system and the other being an MBR. And Phelant recommended the MBR type system, which is a newer system, and the Lyles group went with the SBR based system. So I feel like, quite frankly, we're getting a good price and getting the more, I'll call it, modern type of plant. And for me, that was one of the driving things in going through this, as well as what Eric stated about the fact they came in, I'm not going to say more hungry, but I truly felt Phelant wanted this job, and it may have to do with the fact I think they're doing the Cayugas plan also.
Okay, great. Paul?
Yeah, when I reviewed all of the contract documents or the proposal documents that came in, and for whatever reason I was leaning towards AECOM Lyles, but when we sat down with the interview for the different teams, I was really impressed with the honesty from Black and Veatch. They were more obviously innovative with their design, and they were very conscious about disturbing the site. They wanted to fit the layout of the site so that it doesn't cause much site disturbance, which, and again, is a cost savings. So after the interview, I was told that they're the people that we need to do this job, and I think they're going to be conscious of what it cost us and not try to look for ways of claiming this and getting change orders. So I feel pretty secure that this is the better team. They admitted they had not worked together in the past, but during the process of preparing the proposal, they did get real close to one another, and having met all of them, I think they would work well towards our project in the future. So that's why I casted my recommendation to Black and Veatch and Phelant.
Thank you. Valerie, you've prepared something, I think. So thank you for that.
I'm going to go ahead and read mine. I found the Phelant Black and Veatch proposal superior to that of AECOM, which was substantiated during the interviews at the fire station. The proposal was thorough, including a higher level of design detail, and was developed specifically to meet the goals of the city. The proposal also reflects attention to the challenges of the site location while taking into consideration ease of plant operations. The Phelant Black and Veatch team were well prepared for the interview. Not only had they done their homework, but they included representatives from critical functional areas of the design build team, including design in their 93 plan sheets, construction, process design, and estimator, as well as their operations and startup engineer. Having all those functions available to address the interview panel was invaluable. When I say they did their homework, they did. As part of their proposal development, they held three formal reviews, including a design build charrette consisting of 40 people over 30 days, a value engineering workshop with 24 people over 2 days, and a cost estimating workshop with 16 people over 3 days. To secure the cost for the project, they obtained 2 independent reviews of the proposal and 160 estimates from project subs. As mentioned previously, the terrain of the South Bay Boulevard site poses engineering challenges. To address those challenges, Phelant Black and Veatch conducted additional geotechnical work. This allowed them to take good advantage of the available terrain in their plant design. They determined that some of the construction issues identified in the preliminary geotechnical study was not as bad as originally thought. This also enabled them to come up with a design that required less cut, less off-haul, and the placement of some spoils on-site. They were able to verify design feasibility by excavation of 8 to 10 test pits where key structures would go. This additional geotechnical work was a critical component in the development of the cost proposal. And finally, in addition to our project management team from Corolla Engineering and our public works director, I want to thank my fellow WRFCAC members, Steve Shiley and Paul Donnelly, for their insight and comments during the review and interview process. They have years of technical expertise in engineering, design, construction, as well as consultant selection and negotiations. It was a pleasure to work with them during this critical milestone of project development.
Thank you, Val, and thank you. Richard, or any questions of the subcommittee based on what you've just heard?
No, not the subcommittee. I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
Eric, you mentioned that part of the innovative design was the peak wet weather flows that they took into account. How did they factor in the fact that Cayucas is leaving, building their own plant? How did they factor the INI rates that come from Cayucas in their innovative design?
Thank you. So the original RFP that was sent out at the beginning of January had some flow information in it that was specific to Morro Bay only. Those were based largely on work that was done as part of the facility master plan that looked at flows expected at the treatment plant without Cayucas' involvement, so taking out Cayucas. And actually, during that process, an addendum was issued to that RFP that clarified the flows a little bit. The clarification was a result of some of the work that Corolla is doing on the One Water Plan in development of a collection system model for the city's collection system. So we have a calibrated hydraulic model for the city that was recently developed to help double-check the flow assumptions that Black and Veatch had come up to in their facility master plan. And so they are based on the numbers that Black and Veatch has put forward, and the solution they've put forward is based on just the flows from Morro Bay.
Okay, but when we talk about INI from Cayucas, we have a average flow that comes from Cayucas. The INI rates, the reason why I'm familiar with that, because I did a study there, and the INI rates from Cayucas can go from, the average was 250 to about three or four times the average flows. So I'm kind of concerned with the infiltration coming from Cayucas as it comes from Morro Bay. So it comes on the top side. So I'm trying to figure out how you guys figured out the INI just for Morro Bay.
Just for Morro Bay. Yeah. There was
in addition, it's been said by by Mr. Leivick and the manager that, you know, in a meeting recently with the seniors that that collection lines can't exfiltrate sewage, and maybe you can explain how that happens.
I would address the first part of the question, which has to do with the INI portion. Mm-hmm. So there was a flow study that was done last year. The city has its own meters that are located throughout the collection system, and a specialty firm, VNA, out of the Bay Area, was also hired to do their own separate flow monitoring in order to support not only the WRF program, but really to also support the One Water Plan that was being done. So we do customarily do these collection system monitoring work to catch wet weather events to be able to quantify the INI. So all of that was taken into account and used to be able to identify exactly what INI was coming from. It was actually real storm events that were captured at the beginning of this year, back in January of this year, and we were able to essentially take out Cayucas from those storm events.
Yeah, I'm questioning those figures because we haven't had really heavy storms and enough data there to really get some, accurate data that way.
Yeah.
Now, regarding the exfiltration, can you explain to me how exfiltration does not occur in a gravity line?
I don't recall saying that it doesn't occur. I said it's not the concern INI inflow and infiltration is the higher concern than exfiltration. We get a minor amount of exfiltration from our sewer lines. The gravity sewer lines are not under pressure for the most part. The water table during wet years is higher than the gravity lines. Therefore, the hydrostatic pressure is higher on the outside of the pipe than it is on the inside of the pipe.
Most of our lines are above the water table. Most of the collection lines are above the water table.
I viewed videos showing those collection lines with water pouring into those collection lines.
Down by the by the plant, but when you take into account the collection system as a whole, most of those lines are above the water table.
And generally, the sewer lines are not under pressure, so they're flowing via gravity. In my estimation, in my professional opinion, the wastewater is going to flow in the pipe easier than it will flow outside the cracks in the pipe, because there is less resistance to that flow. Therefore, inflow into the pipes is a higher concern than exfiltration.
You know, you're making no sense, right? You have a cracked pipe, and if you have water inside the pipe and it's cracked, it's going to leak out. You know that, right?
It will minorly leak out, but it's going to flow down the pipe easier than it will flow through those cracks in the pipe. There's resistance to that flow by the soil that is packed around there.
Okay, and then the other question is, in California, we recently, you know, with the passage of AB 398 and, you know, the greenhouse gas issues, when you guys did your bid, did you take into account how we're going to reduce the greenhouse gases or how that's going to be mitigated?
I don't believe that the proposal specifically addressed greenhouse gas mitigation in terms of the evaluation or anything that was put forth in the proposal. Now, the city at one time is considering the addition of solar up at that location to be able to offset. Rob, is there anything else that...
This issue will be fully vetted through the environmental document, the EIR that's coming out. We do know that the any replacement plant to the existing plant will be more energy intensive than the existing facility. A trickling filter plant is a fairly low energy plant. So we will have to mitigate for that greenhouse gas, and some of the ways that we're looking at doing that is on-site generation, so solar at the existing facility. But we do know that any facility that uses aeration blowers will result in a higher energy demand than our existing trickling filter plant.
Okay, and on this plant in the South Bay Boulevard site, because you're going to need a lift station to pump all the sewage there, and right now with Cayucas leaving, the H2S issue that's along Main Street is going to go away. How are you going to mitigate that H2S issue from that force main?
There was provisions that were identified in the RFP for assumed H2S concentrations that would be generated from that force main, so that the proposers could adequately design odor control for the headworks facility there. So there was figures that were identified or design criteria that was provided in that document that told the teams, you need to provide odor control for air that's going to have this concentration in parts per million of H2S.
So basically it's what would they be considered, a class one CEQA that you can't mitigate it away because of just the nature of having the lift station, you're going to generate H2S.
Yeah, there's some things that we're looking at as well on the other side of the program in terms of the conveyance facilities that you're talking about around trying to minimize the amount of time that the sewage spends in the force main so you can try to reduce the amount of H2S that's generated in terms of the sizing for the conveyance pipelines and those kinds of things. But that's something that we're actively looking at and working with waterworks engineers on right now.
Okay. Thank you, Richard, for your comments. Doug, anything?
I was just curious about the...
The test pits revealed fewer problems at the South Bay side. I was just wondering, could you elaborate on that a little bit? Because we did discuss the rock under there previously, and I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, the Black and Veatch VLONC team decided to kind of do their own independent geotechnical investigation, and they did some test pits that were in the specific areas that were identified in their drawings where a lot of the below-grade excavations would occur, to see if they could get a better handle on the occurrence and the amount of serpentine rock that they may have to be dealing with. And as Ms. Leviolette identified, from those test pits, they identified that there's likely less of an issue, potentially, than what the original geotech report had identified based on their specific site layout. So they were able to kind of do more of a pinpointed approach or more strategic approach to looking at, you know, they really want geotech information in some very specific locations. There's going to be additional geotechnical work that's going to happen as the design progresses over the next year, but they wanted to do their own to help, again, sharpen their pencil a little bit on the costs that they presented in their proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. And the only question I had is, or just a reiteration, the total points were 100. We discussed the evaluation criteria at a previous meeting, and we all agreed, at least our recommendation from the WRFCAC was to assign a higher priority to the cost, and I see you've done that. So just in case anybody couldn't read what was on the overhead, it's included in the agenda, and the total scores were, out of a possible 100, 93 for the Filonki Black and Veatch versus AE Ecom score of 79. So is there any further comment on that, or everything looks pretty accurate as reported in the agenda? Okay. I'd like to open it up for public comment, and then we may have some further discussion before we take any action. So if you would like to address, would you please come up? There's a sign-in sheet, so if you would sign your name, that would really help us keep track of who's speaking. Thank you, Mata. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for presenting the WRFCAC subcommittee to us. That was going to be I didn't see it on the... I didn't know you were going to cover that, so thank you for doing that.
Would you state your name, please, for the record?
Oh, yeah, Marla Sadowski.
Thank you.
Anyway, I was wondering if the subcommittee, did you have an opportunity before this meeting to update the rest of the panel, or no? So this is the first that the panel's heard about your experience, and the first the public has heard from you, and you're being asked to approve this without, approve it now and then have it recommended to the city council, and then tomorrow the city council is going to make a decision. Is that the way this is going?
We're interested in public comment, and then if we can address some of your questions at the end, we'll be happy to do
so. Okay. And then also I was wondering, Valerie, when you were talking about I think you mentioned three different meetings with 27 people and 40 people. What were you talking about there? I'd like to know about that. And I just wanted to clarify that the WRFCAC subcommittee, did you only have one meeting with on this, or have you met with the staff and more than one time? It's kind of unclear from the staff report. So that's a question. And I just, in general, I find it very strange that we're poised to set a contract to build a standalone plant that we don't have. We don't own the property. We don't have the DEIR yet. We don't. What they're proposing is to build a plant with no infrastructure to get the sewage to the plant, and I'm just kind of amazed at this process. And I know I've spoken to I've spoken to other people, and I have a friend that's 98. She can't come to the meeting, but she watches at home, and she wanted me to tell you that her message is that this reminds her of a creepy carnival circus show.
Okay, thank you for your comments. I can address one part of it in terms of we do go over our agendas. We receive them 72 hours in advance, and all the detail from the subcommittee report that was presented was given to us well in advance. Or meeting that requirement. So if that answers that. Is there anything you want to add, anybody? Or?
Marla Jo, what I was talking about is as part of the project team's development of their proposal, they conducted a number of independent reviews in the development of that proposal in order to come up with not only the design, but the best possible design cost estimate.
Thank you. Any other public comment, please? Welcome, Barry.
Thank you, Wharfcat. Barry Brannon. Since I was never able to join this august body, I'd like to pass on some notes that I think are really important to what you're doing. On June the 5th, Jeff Heller and I met with the Central Coast Water Board. We met in their office. And we submitted six questions. We wanted to get their idea because we felt that the water board is being used, as I said, weaponized against the city. And I wanted to understand what that meant. So I asked them what their concerns were. And at the meeting was John Robertson, who's the executive officer of the region, and Harvey Packard. And so what they told me is that their first concerns are the following, and this is in the order. The aging plant that has no maintenance being done to it. The second thing was the need for redundancy, because that's not there. And to meet the new federal requirements for the BOD. We aren't doing that yet because of the problems, and I'll go into that. And they also, the primary thing is that they want to make sure that our secondary treatment to eliminate the need for the 301H permit by the deadline. Those were their items. And this is a very amiable meeting. We had an attorney with us who didn't say anything but wanted to listen. And we discussed the needs for some improvements at the existing plant to meet the full secondary and what needed to be done to do that. And they pointed out the fact that to meet the BOD requirements, which is 30, I think it's milliliters per zillion. I don't know what that is, but 30 is the new number. And we talked about the needs with the leaks for the main line that the city is facing. And the city has now completed the one water study that points out the problems. However, that study is not out yet. I tried to get it yesterday, and I understand it's not out yet, maybe be at the end of the month. And we also pointed out some problems with some of the main lines. And, for example, today I brought in a video of a leak that's taking place in the city that appears the way the grasses are growing. They're 3 or 4 feet high. It's been going on for quite some time. It's kind of a loss, but it's there. So they're very interested in the fact that we are basically, as they said, not living up to our responsibilities as a city. And so we pointed out the fact that we have a rate increase already approved. There's 218 money that's accumulating. We have $9 million. And more, I guess, in the reserve fund. And we talked about the flow volumes. We talked about what Cayucos is going away. And we said we really don't know what the infiltration is. The charts that come from the city, come to the city, show that in the winter we get overwhelmed by at least half a million gallons a day extra on a day that it rains like heck. So we said they really, the city can't design, I don't believe, can design a plant until they pin down what the real volumes are. And you're not going to do that by doing what we call in engineering class called a WAG. And all you engineers will remember that I got a red light and I'll go quickly. So we outlined Plan B and they wanted to hear it. But basically they said that they want the city to meet their responsibilities. They don't think we have to move to South Bay to do that. They said, you can do it where you are, but you have to get a permit from the Coast Commission. And I will have a meeting with the Coast Commission shortly. And I think that we can get reassurance that we can work with them. No one's done that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Public comment, welcome.
Thank you. Jeff Heller. I am still looking for a city of 10,000 people anywhere in the world that within the last couple of years is paying or has paid $70 million just for a sewer plant. I just want to make sure that everybody in the city understands that this does not include the whole recycle portion, putting water in the ground. This does not include the lift station and the 3 miles of piping. This is for a plant only for 10,000 people. But what I really want to talk to everybody about is I think awarding the contract to the Felosh, Black, and Veatch team violates California law AB 785. I remember when I worked at Cal Poly on the Poly Canyon Village project, it was a design-build project. And this particular state law requires that any engineering firm that provides the basis of design for the final product cannot be a bidder on that final product. And what that does is protect us from, I would expect that Feloc and Black and Veatch would give an outstanding presentation. Black and Veatch has been involved with this project for many years. They've had many meetings. They know the project and the client inside and out. There's no competition. AECOM could not possibly compete for that. That's why the state law exists. So this document right here is the Facilities Master Plan of November 2016, done by guess who? Black and Veatch. Black and Veatch did the essential design work for the project. And I know you probably all read it or maybe looked through it anyway. It's heavy. But what this document does, in fact, it's done a lot of things that we've been concerned about. One is, by defining the requirements of the project, it has successfully eliminated more affordable options, the different contractors that we've talked about who can do this for $30 million cannot submit a proposal because they don't qualify. Well, what determines the qualifications? This. When the RFP goes out, request for proposals, what is the meat and potatoes in that RFP? The requirements of this. It's against the law to award this contract to Black and Veatch. The project I managed at Poly Canyon Village, we had a separate firm who developed this document. Outstanding document, got to know the client, talked through all the options like this does. There's no way they could bid on the project. They never considered it. They were not there for that purpose. They were paid for this part of the work. It's illegal. By way of disclosure, I worked for AECOM for 5 years in the late 90s. And also by way of disclosure, Mike Nunley and Associates, or Mike Nunley rather, I believe worked for Black and Veatch for 5 years. It answers a lot of questions. Please don't break the law. I think I'm right. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hi, my name is Carol Truesdale. I've lived here since 1995 and a homeowner. My biggest concern is, and always has been, we have leaky sewer pipes. Let's fix those first and really truly find out exactly what this city needs. Why go out and put the city at risk for, we don't even know if we have secure funding. So think about what the decision that you're going to have to make. Fix what we have first, and then look at the whole, not the cart before the horse. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Good evening, or good afternoon, WRFCAC members. Tina Metzger, Morro Bay. I'm really puzzled by a couple of issues I see happening right now. I have a lot of experience with contractors submitting cost analysis for projects on completely different types of projects over 30 years. And the cost analysis is for the owner to get an idea of what they're dealing with, but the company that submits those cost analysis are told up front, you must understand, we want your honest and professional opinion on your analysis, but you cannot be a part of this project. And that is to eliminate any type of conflict of interest. Because as you can imagine, a cost analysis with the construction company that feels like they may get the job will pad it. So I'm confused right now that we're, according to the special meeting agenda, the staff is recommending that WRFCAC recommend to the City Council the selection of Black & Veatch as the preferred proposer for the WRFCAC on-site improvements and provide direction to staff to begin negotiations. So how can this be? Another question I have that I'm puzzled about is that staff is recommending that WRFCAC recommend to the City Council to begin, for city staff to begin negotiations with Black & Veatch. And yet, I'm not sure, but we don't have a certified EIR. We don't really know what the problems are of the site. How can we begin negotiations with Black & Veatch? So I'm confused. If you can help me or can staff help me understand this, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you, Tina.
Good evening. Kerrigan Mahan, Morro Bay resident, WRFCAC. Listen, I had no intentions of speaking. I've stated this over the past year. This stuff is really out of my... it's so much technology that has nothing to do with my profession on any level. But what does have to do with me and my profession is smell test, which I've been talking about for a year. This is not passing the smell test on any level. You guys are on our side. That's the way I'm trying to look at this. And you're supposed to be recommending Black & Veatch. This is a dog and pony show. It's a bad news situation, and it has been from the start. We have no business being at South Bay. None. $130 million, $160 million, $150 million. It's all ridiculous, completely ridiculous. We really have to know that. Now, we, you, them, have all listened. You guys are smart people. You've all listened to people that are really hitting the nail on the head. Jeff Heller, Barry Brannon, Tina Metzger, Carol Truesdale, Ms. Sadowski. Richard's asking good questions. They're not being properly answered. We voted for a 215, for a 218, and 2015. Where's the money? Why aren't the leaks being fixed? This has to be shut down. This project has to be shut down. And we're going to do everything in our power to do just that. The fact we're even discussing another 218 is deplorable. Do the right thing. Shut it down. Shut it down. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I think there may be some things we can respond to. Eric and Rob, I know this issue with the AB has come up before, 785, I think Mr. Heller referenced. And has that, again, has that been fully vetted by our legal attorney advice in terms of how that design, build, government, procurement process is working?
Yeah, that is correct. The city attorney has addressed that previously. And Rob can probably fill in a little bit on that. But essentially, the someone prepared the facility master plan, and then there was a break between that facility master plan and this design-build project, and that is the RFP and the procurement documents that are included in that RFP. They serve as the kind of the preliminary design documents between the planning phase that was done in the facility master plan and then the design-build phase.
Well, okay. Couldn't be, isn't that by proxy a violation?
Our city attorney has addressed that, and he doesn't believe that it's a violation of AB
785
because there was the preparation of the specifications in the RFP were based on multiple sources. There, be it based on the facilities master plan, that was a source. The master water reclamation plan, and then consulting with staff on specifics of materials and manufacturers, that there is enough distance between Black & Veatch and their proposal to not be a violation of AB 785.
It would probably behoove us to have the city attorney here, so we can actually question him, and because I questioned some of his judgment. I mean, recently it was advertised that the city attorney participated in an illegal city meeting. So his opinion seems to be ethics, as far as ethics goes concerned, is marginal at best.
Okay, duly noted. There is a meeting tomorrow night with more update on this. Will the city attorney be there?
The city attorney will be there and can respond to questions from council at that point.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. We had some other comments, and I think I believe these have been addressed. Go ahead, Rob.
Let me just see if I can some of the okay. questions, and you can get the one. Remind me of the ones that I don't handle. Why are we awarding this contract without an EIR?
Yeah. Tina's coming.
The EIR, we cannot award a contract without an EIR, as we cannot purchase the property without an EIR. So the staff will be negotiating with the preferred proposer, and once the EIR is certified, we would bring a contract back for council to execute. Little clarification on the negotiations, too. We have a guaranteed maximum price. That is the maximum price for this facility. The negotiations that will take place will be within that guaranteed maximum price, and our goal is to lower that guaranteed maximum price with those negotiations.
So you would not be awarding a contract when you say you will award after the completion of negotiations. That assumes successful negotiations on any other points that you
exactly.
are in discussion with.
And certification of an EIR.
Correct. And then proceed with that and buying the property. Okay, thank you for that clarification. Let's see, what else do we have?
Regarding the leaking pipes, mm-hmm. We have, through our One Water efforts, identified capital projects that need to be done, and we'll be proceeding with those as council approves that the planning document through the One Water plan. They will be budgeted for and completed. We held off on doing much of that work this fiscal year and last fiscal year, a couple of reasons. It's a resource allocation issue. We were focusing on other efforts and didn't have the resources. We are directed to do kind of the council goals and objectives first and then work on other things. And so it's a resource allocation issue. As council adopts a budget to do that, we'll be able to hire additional resources to facilitate those repairs.
And I think there was some additional information on that in the agenda posted for tomorrow evening's special city council meeting.
Yes.
In terms of that. And there also is information in that agenda about which has been asked by citizens in terms of the 215 rate increase and where those funds have been. You'll see most of all and then some, it looks like, have been deposited into the accumulation funds.
Correct.
So.
Why are we doing a RFP for design build of a facility? It's based on direction of council to reduce the cost of the project. We had estimates of those costs that we were ready to release information of April of 2017 for a 218 study. Mm-hmm. Council felt the cost estimates for this facility were too high and wanted to get bids for those. We're doing the design build process. We don't actually get bids on the design build process. We get proposals, and this method we've chose is a guaranteed maximum price. So we have those in place, and those will feed into the 218 analysis to lower that estimate of funds needed to not only construct the new WRF facility, but to maintain the rest of the utility also and operate. Let's see.
That's about all I caught up here. Anything else? Paul?
I'm trying to remember here, but Marla asked when we had met as a subcommittee. We originally met when the qualification statements came in. And then when the proposals came in, I'm trying to remember that we met and recommended interviews, and then the interviews was on the first. So we really, as a group, never met by ourselves. We've only been met when we've been called down to City Hall to discuss these things and for the interviews. So to let Marla know that is one comment I had.
Okay.
And I don't know, was it, you know, what day was it that we met? Didn't we meet the Monday of that week in May?
Yeah, we met on May 16th, and then we also had another meeting to discuss the kind of the sharing of cost information from the proposals. I can't remember. It's probably about a week later, and then we met on June 1st for the interviews and then the discussion. That's what I have in my notes.
Thank you.
You know, just so we're clear, okay, so this bid is just for a sewer plant?
This proposal with the guaranteed maximum price is for the WERF facility, including the advanced treatment, so a tertiary treatment plus the advanced oxidation process, UV filtration, no lift station force mains, and no return line or injection wells.
Okay, so it's to basically to treat sewage to tertiary levels.
Beyond tertiary.
Beyond tertiary.
So it's got advanced oxidation included in that price.
Okay. And then, so that's going to be that cost. Then we're going to have the cost for the lift station, the force main, and then all the infrastructure to go to the injection wells.
Correct.
That's excellent. Does this include the outfall infrastructure to dump out of the outfall?
No.
So it's just a force main and then...
No force main in this proposal.
I mean, just the plant...
Just the plant site and the site work up to the fence line.
And so have you talked to Cayucas about dumping brine out of the outfall when you're treating?
We've talked to Cayucas a little bit. We need to have a JPA meeting. We haven't been able to schedule that yet, as of yet.
So we're bidding on bidding on something that we don't even know if we can dump out of the outfall?
We can dump wastewater out our outfall.
We're dumping brine, right?
Brine, that would be a product of wastewater treatment.
That would be a product of the oxidation...
Advanced, right. It would be beyond tertiary treatment.
Right.
So I don't think
that's not something that we have right now.
I don't think the JPA is specific on what the constituents of the wastewater product are.
They had a meeting, they remember, when they would try to bring in...
That was from the desal plant.
Yeah.
Not from a wastewater treatment plant.
So we're basically dumping... You don't see that Cayucas is going to have a problem dumping... brine through the outfall?
No.
And they're still using their 40% or 35%, right?
As of this point, they are. And they have a future project to dump brine out the outfall also.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Any other comments, questions?
Yeah, I've got a question for Joe.
Go ahead, Doc.
You know, Barry was talking about the new federal requirements, which, of course, is what has stimulated this whole thing. And in discussions with Joe about the 30-30 standards, I know you made the comment that that could never happen on the existing plant. And I just was wondering if you could just elaborate on that a little bit, please.
I don't think... saying never happen at the existing plant site is proper. Right now, without upgrades, the existing plant cannot meet a 30-30 standard. Okay. You know, so the existing plant was designed to meet a 70 for TSS and a 120 for BOD. And it achieves those limits fairly easily, but nowhere near the 30-30 standard.
Have you talked to any of the, to reduce our BODs, have you talked to any, like Mission Linen and other maybe hotels about subsidizing a pretreatment program so we could reduce our BODs?
Actually, BODs of industry-wide have been on the increase with reduced water flows. So your concentration of BOD in your is really a measure of your organics. And the less water that we conserve, the higher the concentration of that organic matter actually is. And really the way to reduce BOD is a biological process. And you wouldn't want hotels and stuff having a biological process in their backyard because essentially that's a treatment plant. What really... what we have control over with the industrial pretreatment program is more your fats, oils, and greases that create very problematic, you know, for us, and pH limits. You know, Mission basically has huge pH swings because of the detergents and stuff that they use in the cleaning process.
So the detergents don't have an effect on the BODs at all?
What the detergents have effect on is your pH, and your pH determines the type of bacteria that actually grow and reduce the BOD, the organics. So it can have a dramatic effect on your process, but it really doesn't have an effect on the BOD itself. You know, pH doesn't consume the organics. What it affects is the amount of bacteria and the type of bacteria that can grow and readily reduce that BOD.
Thanks, Joe. Paul.
Yeah, kind of getting at the matter at hand here. negotiations, you mentioned that briefly, but exactly what are we negotiating with these people right now that we don't know from their proposal?
there were some different things that we identified when we reviewed the proposals that we want to get some clarification on, some minor issues. And then, as Rob mentioned, once we enter into this negotiation process, it gives us the opportunity to get into a little bit more, into a deeper level of detail in terms of how they came up with their project and potentially identify ways to reduce costs of things that we may be able to eliminate from their design, essentially.
You don't think there's a possibility that you could run into an impasse and these people walk away from the table, could you?
That's always a possibility. We are going to be talking about some different elements that, but I would not say never.
Okay. The other question I have is that we know that we're collecting money from two enterprise funds, and I don't know how that mixes into how you pay consultants, pay this contract. What portion of the water enterprise fund pays for this? Yep. How do we know the split?
We're having that discussion right now, and as we've been told by our city attorney, that line can be fairly fluid, and we've decided to pick a point, and that point is beyond tertiary treatment, because we've been directed to send tertiary treatment to the tertiary treated water to the ocean has always been our standard for discharge. Anything beyond that would be charged to the water fund.
The regional board only requires full secondary. How did you make the quantum leap to tertiary for this split?
Council direction.
But we discussed this before. We said it was after secondary, and Pannoni even said that. And now it's changed?
I think part of the clarification is it's kind of difficult to make that distinction between secondary and tertiary treatment, specifically with the technology that we is associated with the Black & Veatch proposal. It's a membrane bioreactor. Where you're getting kind of combined secondary and tertiary treatment, and so I'd say with this project specifically, I think the way that we're looking at it right now is anything after the MBR. So
okay.
Theoretically, that would be kind of secondary / tertiary treatment, but that's the way that we're looking at it. If it was a different process, kind of a separate secondary process, and then some type of other tertiary filtration step, we could more easily draw that line.
Now, obviously, we want to make this recommendation to the City Council, but the City Council won't enter into a contract until the EIR is complete, and also there's revenue to pay for this?
Correct. So I think Black & Veatch probably wouldn't enter, and Phelons wouldn't enter into a contract until there's revenue to pay for it also. That's why they're in this business.
One of the concerns was brought up was the conveyances. How certain are we on the pipeline routes, and have we found a preferred alignment for the pipelines yet?
The city has looked at three different alignments to this point. I think there are some fairly large differences in the cost associated with the different alignments. So we're still in the middle of that process in terms of finalizing the alignment, as well as finalizing the pump station configuration as well that's associated with those pipelines. But that process is – we're getting better detail on that every day as we work with Waterworks. But we've not selected a final pipeline alignment. We've made an assumption based on what we think may be the preferred pipeline alignment in order to progress the rate study specifically to have a cost that can then go into the rate study. But we don't have a quote-unquote finalized pipeline alignment at this time.
How many pipes are we talking about?
One, two, three. Right now we're looking at... depending on the alignment that the offsite recycle water facilities take, meaning the pipeline that's coming from the treatment plant that's going to the injection field, whether that's located west or east of the highway. At this point in time, we don't know that for sure. It could be somewhere between 3 and 4 pipes.
Will all of them be in the same alignment, or one will be on one side of the freeway and the other on the other side of the freeway?
That's what we're looking at now. There are some reasons to do that, obviously, because of cost savings. If we can put them all into a single trench, then there may be some cost savings that are realized there. But I think there's two things that we need to consider. One is the preferred alignment for the conveyance facilities, the raw wastewater conveyance facilities, and the line going back to the outfall. I think that's one thing to think about. The other thing is to figure out what side of the highway we're going to be on with the injection wells. And then the other is just physical limitations of being able to route that many pipelines in some of the corridors that we're looking at. It could be difficult to be able to have a trench large enough to be able to accommodate all of those 4 pipes. There's separation requirements that are associated with, you know, potable recycled water and sewer and everything else. So we're taking all that stuff into consideration right now.
Another unknown is our injection wells. We were about to award a contract, and then it was withdrawn, the pilot program for injection. Do we have any forecast? I mean, this is very crucial for this whole project to work, is knowing that we have a place to put this water. When will that pilot program take place?
Likely council would look at awarding that probably at the same meeting that they make a decision on the 218.
Okay. And then one last thing, because you wrote over here on the AECOM, Lyle's rationale under the proposed design and performance guarantee. You said that their conventional IPR treatment process with the sequencing batch reactor and full advanced treatment was more easily permittable. Is there going to be a problem with the Black and Veatch Phylank concepts as far as permittability and reaching the removal of viruses and pathogens and whatnot?
No, that's a good question. I could give you a two-hour discussion of that or presentation of that. But the short answer to that is no. It's a process that can be permitted. I won't say it's a simple numbers game, but there is a numbers game or a numbers there's equations you have to go through or numbers you have to satisfy for the removal of those 3 different constituents, the viruses Giardia and Cryptosporidium. And we can do it with the MBR. The reason why we said it was maybe more permittable, the other alternative, which is the separation of the secondary process, a different kind of a separate microfiltration or ultrafiltration step, RO, and the UVAOP, is because that's been permitted previously. But we have firm standing to be able to go through that process, and it's something that that the program management team is going to be taking on here very shortly in terms of moving that forward. But it is something that it will be permittable. It's just going to take probably a little bit more back and forth with the Department of Drinking Water and some of their staff.
Yeah, quite recently the Division of Drinking Water adopted the Western Australia has a long history with MBR plants and their use for in reclaimed water, and they've adopted their studies that have been done to credit for virus inactivation through MBR plants. Sometime this spring, I think the Department of Drinking Water adopted those standards.
Has this been done in California before?
MBR with groundwater injection? I don't believe so.
No.
And don't they rely on some of that groundwater retention to get their log credits they need to make their goal?
They do, and I think what you're referring to is the previous studies that were done, the hydrogeological work that was done that initially showed the initial findings were that the minimum travel time was met and that the log removal credits would be granted with that travel time. And so, again, you bring up a good point about the follow-on hydrogeo work and its importance. I think that the importance of that hydrogeo work is not necessarily to say that can we do this or not. I think fairly certain it can be done. And I think the larger question is exactly how much water can the base intake and what's the optimal location for the injection. Is it on the west side or the east side? Those are the kind of the two questions that are going to be answered with that. Not whether it's something that's viable that can move forward. It's what's the optimum location and exactly how much water are we talking about.
Well, my really concern here is that we have all the operating parts known. Be crazy to build a car and not have the engine in it, I mean, or the drivetrain. So there's uncertainty on the injection wells, there's uncertainty on the pipeline routes. It seems to me that before we get into the big plant picture that we should really get those things solved first.
And there's several alternatives for each of those, and we've got an alternative for both the west side of the highway and the east side of the highway and different cost estimates associated with each of those alternatives for the off-site recycled water facilities. And then we have the different costs for the different pipeline alignments and pump station configurations. And so what we've had to do is go through and identify what we think are the best options right now. We're going to continue to analyze that, but those are the options that we're going to move forward with to come up with the larger WRF program, and that's what's going into the rate study and moving forward. But those don't necessarily impact what's happening at the treatment plant site.
Okay. Are we also going to include the bid alternate to do the demolition work with this? Is that part of the negotiations?
I don't think that's something that we need to make a decision about at this point in time. It's something that we can get refinement on and negotiate with the selected proposer. But currently, as the demolition is structured in the proposal, it's an ad alternate that could be doesn't even necessarily need to be invoked right away when the contract is awarded. It's something that could be initiated in construction.
It's also a point where we would want to get bids from local contractors to see if perhaps they have sharper pencils than Black & Veatch Velons did and could do that for less than they had, and we would not invoke the ad alternative and award it to a different contractor.
So you'd go design, bid, build like you're doing with the lift station and pipelines?
Correct.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Any other questions or comments?
Is the
go ahead, gotta get your mic on.
The WIFIA financing, would that apply also to these other add-on items?
The WIFIA financing is for 49% of the entire project, so including the lift station, force mains, and the IPR portion.
Okay.
And they're working on that application. I believe that deadline is July 18th of this year.
Or the 17th, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. All right, so do we have a motion or anything? Or any further discussion?
There's no further discussion. I'd like to make a motion that the WRF CAC recommend to City Council the selection of Philonic Black & Veatch as the preferred proposer for the WRF on-site improvements and provide direction to staff to begin negotiations. Do I have a second?
I second it.
All right, thank you. That was Valerie with the motion, and we can get you a copy of that, as well as your comments earlier. I think they were very helpful, so I can go on the record. And Steve, thank you for the second. Any further discussion on the motion on the floor? If I may ask for a vote, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, please say no.
No.
I'm uncomfortable with the 785 thing, so I'm going to say no for now.
Okay. So, is that a no or an abstention?
An abstention.
Okay, thank you. So we have a 4 yeses, 1 no, and 1 abstention. No was Richard Sadowski, and the abstention is Doug Rogers. All right. Thank you, gentlemen and ladies. Any other further discussion? I would like to bring up in the agenda for tomorrow evening's, it meeting, special city council, it refers to a joint meeting, planning and WRFCAC on July 3rd. That's on page 12 of 60, and I know that agenda has been modified. But maybe we need to check on that July 3rd, the day before 4th of July. We are having a joint meeting of three advisory boards. Is that scheduled, or we have a quorum on that, Gina? Yes, okay. So, okay to announce that?
I believe that the July 3rd meeting is still on the books for, even though it is before the holiday, it's Joint Planning Commission, WRFCAC, to look at the EIR. Right before the Planning Commission meeting that night.
Oh, okay. So you might want to do a quorum check on that, Gina, that July 3rd one. Okay, thank you. And then the June 25th Monday, that is the three advisory boards. That would be WRFCAC, Planning Commission, and Public Works. Okay.
And that's to look at the rate analysis.
That's the rate analysis. Okay.
What date was that?
Monday, June 25th, I believe, 3 o'clock?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay, so any other comments, closing comments, questions? All right, meeting adjourned. Thank you.
I'm uncomfortable with something like this.